Hi everyone and welcome to another episode of Freight to the Point. I am Anne-Sophie Fribourg, Zencargo's VP of Global Ocean Freight. And today we've invited Richard Fatal, Zencargo's Chief Commercial Officer, back on again to talk about what's happened in our industry in the last month and a half and what shippers should be keeping their eye on. So welcome, Richard.
Hi, Anne-Sophie. Thanks so much for having me back on.
So just to give a kind of a recap, in the last Ocean update, we discussed about the rates in April that were showing signs of a rebound. We discussed about capacity that would enter the market, mainly on Asia-Europe. We had also seen that the volumes in terms of demand were down by significant numbers, both on Trans-Pacific and Asia-Europe. So all this doesn't give us a good visibility on the market. And also what we've seen is a shift of manufacturing from China to other countries. So Richard, can you tell us a bit more about this and what has happened in the last months in the industry?
Sure. So I would say it's been an eventful month in terms of what I would call false alarms. So I think we're quite used to, you know, risk and volatility in, you know, global ocean supply chains by now. And, you know, certainly waking up, you know, a few weeks ago to the news that there was a vessel stuck in the Suez Canal was something that didn't shock me as it might once have shocked me. You know, I was very quickly on the phone, furiously coming up with action plans for our customers. And then I decided to hold back about half an hour to realize that the vessel had been set free and was on its way and there were no problems. But there have been some developments that, you know, did look like they could cause some real risk in the supply chain over the past month. Particular note, the Panama Canal, you know, which is used for cargo, which is moving particularly from Asia to the East Coast of the United States, you know, is one of the key lanes, has been drying up. And you might note that on previous calls, you know, we've explained that a lot of cargo, because of the lack of capacity at West Coast ports and because a lot of companies in the United States are moving their warehouses and they're relocating them, has moved from West to East Coast. And that means more volume needs to go through the Panama Canal. And there's been some worry that because the Panama Canal has been drying up and there's been insufficient rainfall over the last few months, that there wouldn't be enough capacity in the Panama Canal to cover all of the, you know, volume requirement. And to give you context, about 6% of global trade goes through the Panama Canal. So I think in 2022, that was 14,000 vessels carrying over 500 million tons of cargo.
Yeah, you're right. But I've also read that some shipping lines are discharging cargo for Mexico before entering the canal. So they are already taking measures, I would say, to lighten the ships. But what will be the real impact on the shippers?
Well, look, I mean, so far the shipping lines looked like they were going to try to impose a surcharge. They were also warning about potential delays and potential disruption. And we haven't seen that come to fruition. For the moment, I would say it was more of a, let's say, false alert. And like, you know, general rate increases, which we've seen on that lane, which haven't really come to fruition, it hasn't yet come to fruition. But I would certainly watch out. We saw in Europe last year the impact of drying out on the canals, you know, in mainland Europe. And we do know that this can have a real impact, you know, if it develops further. I think for the moment the capacity is there to support the vessels that are going to the East Coast.
And what about the news that we had last week about the agreement between the Port Maritime Authorities and the ILWU? Maybe that would have an impact on the medium term by diverting some of the cargo that was shifted to the East Coast because of the problems of congestion in the West Coast ports, that will move back to the West Coast ports.
Well, that's definitely possible. So you raise a good point, the issue of labor contracts, particularly on the West Coast of the United States. This was the other key risk that's kind of come up over the last month. You know, it's always a concern for anyone shipping to the United States, and there's always a threat of disruption because of the strength of the labor union and the extent to which they go through periodic negotiations. And we did see some real risk on the West Coast, and we saw people divert cargo in anticipation of that risk. And we saw actually West Coast ports shut down, you know, for a period of time. So LA was down for a period of time, as well as, you know, some of the other West Coast ports. And we were concerned that it would be a real disruption. But obviously, in short measure, there was a conversation which happened between the West Coast Union, the ILWU, and the ports, and they reached a tentative agreement, which involves a 32% salary increase spread over the next 6 years. And it looks like for now, this is a, you know, a real positive in terms of potential disruption over the coming months and year on the West Coast, and should lead to some rebalancing of volumes between both ports.
Okay, and that should bring a more normal situation, I would say. And what about the rates, Richard? We've seen that there were some general rate increase that happened late April in a slack market, but with an impression that that was done by the shipping lines to get a better context for negotiations of long-term contracts for the BCOs. What is your idea on that?
Yeah, for sure. So it felt like the GRIs that were coming in were a little bit opportune in terms of their timing. You know, as you say, May is the key renegotiation point for annual contracts, and it was important to have some stability or at least a reduction in the downward trend of the market in time for those key BCO negotiations. What we've seen is that those GRIs have not held. You know, annual negotiations have happened at levels closer to the pre-GRI, you know, rate levels than the post-GRI rate levels. And since then, you know, we've also seen a real kind of lack of peak in this important period of the year. With that said, we do continue to see, you know, measures by the carriers to take out capacity and a continuation of blank sailings. And therefore, you know, the stability of service is something that customers really need to watch out for, even in a market where, you know, the rate environment is a little bit more slack.
And we've seen also the split of capacity that has been reviewed by some carriers between the major trades, TP and Asia-Europe, and some European carriers have diverted capacity from TP to Asia-Europe in order to be more present on that trade. So can we now talk briefly about Asia-Europe and what we've seen recently? We know there's a lot of capacity coming in. There's 9% added capacity in June versus May. Volumes are a bit better than on Trans-Pacific, I would say. Demand is a bit higher. What is your idea about the evolution of the rates and the trend of this market?
Sure. So, I mean, we're definitely starting to see the new alliance landscape having an impact on the market. So with MSC moving in and, you know, introducing the Swan service, which is a standalone service on Asia-Europe, we really start to see that the toolkit that the carriers had in terms of blanking is a little bit impacted by that change in landscape. And with the combination of those introductions of new services, but also the addition of vessels that are coming on stream and the lack of, you know, regular seasonal Christmas time cargo that we see coming through in July, Asia-Europe trade, you know, really does feel rather weak. With that said, we do continue to see across the more robust alliances, significant blank sailing programs, you know, on Asia-Europe. And I would say some bottoming out of rates at levels which really, as the kind of Hapag-Lloyd CEO announced just last week, are somewhat unsustainable for the shipping lines. So I would really see kind of the Asia-Europe trade is now really operating at, let's say, long-term unsustainable levels. And, you know, I would anticipate shippers wanting to kind of lock in longer term contracts at these levels and shipping lines really trying to mitigate the risk of any further deterioration in rates.
Yeah. So what would you advise our customers? There is still good opportunities to do on the spot market, but when we would like to have a sustainable supply chain, what is your advice on these volatile markets for the coming weeks?
So I would say from a rate perspective, I think you're now at levels where when you divide it into the cost of goods sold of any, you know, any higher margin or middle margin product, you know, the freight is really starting to become, you know, much less of a significant cost component. And now it's really important to focus on service. So I wouldn't be thinking about the spot market as a key advantage in terms of price at this point. I think you can certainly look to lock in a rate for, you know, a month, a quarter, or even a longer period of time with some stability and an allocation associated to it. And I think that that's a really important thing to look at doing at this time. The only thing I would say to that is I do think it's important that you leave some capacity to have flexibility at this point, because you can, you know, agree on an agreement with a particular shipping line And that shipping line might, at these levels, enter into more robust blank sailing programs, which might mean that the service is affected. So I would say if you can contract with a supply chain partner to offer you a couple of shipping lines, a regularity of volume at a reasonable rate, which, you know, is at the sorts of levels we've been experiencing in more recent weeks, or even a touch higher, that you will certainly have sustainability and a reduction of risk in your supply chain at this point. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it's very important to balance service options and regularity and space protection with the rate at this point, especially just given where we are in the market. I mean, you know, you're talking about, you know, record low levels on the Asia-Europe trade.
And I'm sure shipping lines would be eager to provide the competitive long-term rates, knowing that they are launching new services, they are bringing in new ships. We saw that the latest ships from the Alliance are being launched, 24,000 TEU ships, LNG dual ships. I think provided we give our customers give good forecast, they will be able to commit to rates and deliver.
Well, I think that's really what's key. I couldn't agree more, Anne-Sophie. So now it's really key that you're looking at your supply chain, you're working with a partner. If you can work very closely with your factories to get a more accurate weekly and monthly forecast of volumes, and you can stick to that forecast, you can build up a track record against a contract. And at these kind of levels, you can benefit from, you know, some stability going into the rest of the year at levels that will really help the cost base of your supply chain.
Thank you, Richard. That's it for today. So thanks to you and thanks to our listeners for turning into this episode of Freight to the Point. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our show. And if you have any feedback on this episode, please do not hesitate to reach out on LinkedIn. Goodbye.